No wonder I wasn't recording. Now you turn it down like this so that the thing doesn't go beyond this red part here, you see. Right. It can go a little higher.
All right. Okay. They have these facts prepared.
Keep it away from
us. Prepared somebody to
the
to pack them up in street-bound fashion. If we go up to the
you may not get this because of the noise, but just try.
Okay.
What, 3 pounds?
I feel like a newsreporter.
48 pounds, and this is going to the market now with 15 little packages, one of those.
And this weighs them out in a little bag.
Now, weighs them in a little bag.
Ready to go, and then they found that they had too many of them, so now they're dumping them and putting them in these little bags for a supermarket.
Keep it away from
each one of those weighs them and dumps them.
Let's go over here.
The bags all weigh the same. Okay. Could you tell us, does he own land?
Yes, he does.
How much land does he own?
He's got about 50 acres.
About 50 acres. Is that a big farm for here?
It's medium.
Medium, uh-huh. And how many people does he have to operate that farm?
Well, he has about six.
He's to operate the farm. Well, of course, he's got more help here in the packing house. And we have migrant workers, if you know them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A lot of the migrants.
Where do the migrant workers live?
He has a place for them to stay.
I see. Uh-huh.
It's all under government contract.
Yeah,
they come from Puerto Rico. And then they go back again. The farmer pays their fare, and then they go back.
And these 50 acres, that's been in the family since the... many years, has it? Or
no, a lot of it's new land.
Oh, I see.
A lot of it's new land.
Did he clear it?
Yeah. But he doesn't grow enough for the package he buys from other farmers.
Oh, he buys from other farmers, too. And then does he ship them, or do people come and pick them up?
He ships them.
I see. And so how many trucks does he have?
Well, he has, usually he'll sell. I mean, he don't do much shipping. He has one farmer he deals quite a bit with.
Uh-huh.
They hire, some have their own trucks, others hire trucks.
Uh-huh.
Here's the truck right over here.
When the people want to buy from him, how do they do that?
On the phone or...
They call him up and they order some. There isn't a sort of an auction or anything like that.
Not anymore. They know it's all the greater money.
People, would you come over here for a minute? We were just hearing about this farm. This farm is 50 acres, but the man that owns it, he also buys other onions, and then these are shipped. The man that wants to buy them just calls up here and gives an order, and then they're shipped out. Is it mostly supermarkets?
Well, it's a little bit of about everything. The
I see.
You
know, what is it? What's Ed?
Ed does.
His brother buys a lot. He's a broker. Oh, I see.
Well, I can show you.
Matter of fact, they ship that to New York. But not packed this way, the 50-pound bag.
We've been doing quite a bit of Army orders we've been shipping out here.
The Army.
For the Army.
See, some people do nothing but buy and sell. They're called brokers. All they do is buy from the farmer and find a customer.
But they have agents, for instance, even in Europe. And these agents cable in for orders.
Do you sell much out of the United States?
I would say about 20% of it goes outside the United States.
20% goes out of the United States. Did you want to show us something?
I can show you the back.
All right, this way, people.
Yes. Could I ask you,
are you a member of the family?
No, I'm not.
You just work here.
Sure.
I see. Now, you said that if a few rainy days and you can't sell any, this place becomes very full?
Well, no, we can empty this right out in a matter of a few days if we happen to get rainy days.
Oh, I see. But it keeps coming in all the time.
Yes.
But this is not just from Mr. Sobia.
No, that's most of the onions that he's bought.
See, it comes from all around here, and he happens to have, what does he have? He has a place to bag them and store them, and many farmers wouldn't have that. So they would sell here, and he would do that then, you see. I guess it costs a lot to have a big place like this.
The equipment, the machinery, that's cost.
Yeah.
See, very few farmers have the packing equipment like you saw here. There are some, but not many. Now,
Shut up!
That's picked by hand. It was picked for them. That's all picked by machinery. Machine picks the onions and the hydraulic don't even touches my hand.
Well, most of these here we had dumped over ourselves. But otherwise,
why?
No.
Why are some picked by hand and some by machinery? Stay over here, people, so you can hear Ricky. Stay here, please. It's hand-picked if a man just doesn't have the machinery, is that?
Well, the early onions, too, they're a little green. The machine won't pick them. It's dry. So when they start harvesting, they use usually by hand. And they pick by hand also to make room for the machine to turn around. But if it's an onion puller... How many is that? About 16 bushels? 17 bushels.
Yeah.
And they don't lift them, they have hydraulic lifts out in the field, they don't even touch it by hand.
One of the interesting things is an example of automation. Making individual bags of onions that then travel down and get sealed. But there's one machine there that does nothing but bag onions, boom, 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 boom. About three times faster than those four people can do it. And that's exactly what
now, is there a time soon when all the onions are gone and the store is empty?
No,
or does it go on all winter long?
Even when we don't have our onions, they'll go ahead and buy them.
I
saw a pack of Egyptian onions here once, about 2 or 3 years ago. They bought the Egyptian onions in New York and they bring back here.
And they were $10 a hundred.
Well,
am I right? Was it 2 years ago?
Yes, about 4 years ago.
But the Orange County is a very nice place.
It's a long way to go for onions.
Egyptian onions is half garlic and almost half garlic and half onion.
Wow. All right, people. Some of you didn't get to see everything.
Can you speak the story?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to. I lured the packing here on the other side. Testing, it's all right.
They're not working today.
Might as well cook.
And it could be spoiled that way. So you saw those big blocks of ice in there. They put those blocks in here. This machine chops them up and blows them into the trucks on top of the celery. So there's a layer of ice there. And then the boxes of the truck are refrigerators. And they keep the celery cool on the trip.
They don't have to do that to onions. They do it celery and lettuce, but not onions.
This is tips on your friendly foot.
It's very hot. They may say going to Jacksonville, Florida, they may have to make a stop someplace, and they re-ice it again.
They re-ice it again.
Oh, that is.
Oh, yeah. When you get in the bus, put your celery away and let's not see it again until we get to the camp tonight.
No.
You understand? Well, I think the best... Now, look here. Now it's recording, and the volume is too high. I'm going to turn it down so that it stays on this side of the red recording. All right, now turn it off. No, you don't need to do anything here.
All right, okay. I'm broadcasting.
A conglomerate. It was laid down years ago under the ocean and pressed together into a very hard rock, and it has a lot of quartz crystals in it. I'll show you samples of that in a minute. But underneath this rock is a layer of this dark stuff, and you'll see it all around on the roads here, crushed up into gravel. Underneath there, we have this kind of an arrangement, and where it's been exposed along these cliffs that you saw as you drove up along the mountains, this dark rock is softer, a good deal softer, so that when it begins to wear from rain, water, ice, frost, all those things, this rock cracks off and leaves these sharp cliffs. You see, if it had been the other way around, we'd had the soft rock on top, and we just had kind of round hills here. But because it's this way...
Is that shale on the bottom?
Shale. This shale. Is a shale, which is again a rock that's been deposited under a sea that was here years ago and pressed together, but this is simply made of what we call mud, and the material in it is much softer than this. And this is almost like concrete, which you know concrete is put together with bigger stones and little stones and cement to hold all the mass together, and this has different sizes in it too, just the same way, larger pebbles and fine sand pressed together by heat and pressure. And so that makes the mountains. I don't know whether you're going over into the other valley at all when you go back, but and I don't know that it's clear enough. You look when you get up higher on the ridge, see if you can see across this valley to the west to the Catskills, a different range of mountains that you've probably heard about, and this range of mountains is a completely different sort of formation. Just think of it as a great mass of level layers that were pushed up for some reason when there were great pressures in the earth, rose up high, and then there were streams and all kinds of wearing away, and what is there is what's left over after this great mass of material was worn down. Just a few hard caps on the top of certain parts of it that make it higher than the rest. And so we have right here, within sight, when it's clear enough, two different kinds of mountains formed completely differently, which is interesting. Now, as we go along, I'll try to point out one or two things about the rocks and what they're used for. And one of the things that I think we'll get a chance to look at somewhere along the line is what the glacier did to it. I suppose you've studied a little about the glacier.
Yes, yes, we have.
And we'll see the markings where the glacier rode over the tops of these mountains and left scratches and smoothed off places that are interesting to feel. Also, we'll see places where it's left boulders in odd places, which I'll try to point out. We'll go up, I'll go with you as far as where the lake is, and we'll maybe stop there and talk a minute about how we think this may have been formed. It's a very unusual lake because it's up high in the mountain. Usually, as you know, you find lakes down in the valleys, but this one is actually up on the top of the mountain, or almost at the top. Very, very peculiar sort of thing. And in these rocks, you find in the shale some of the little fossils, and you probably have heard about these. There are a few small marks of the shells in there that you can look at in a minute. And I have a larger one that I think shows even better, some of the big shells. You see here there are marks of shells.
And that was the mud of the sea bottom once, and these are shells of animals that were in the sea, or shells of various fish.
Pressed into the mud and just left their mold there. And this one actually is one of the rocks from the Catskills. This one is the actual shale that's found here, and we don't find any in the other rock, simply because we believe that if there were any shells or things dropped in there, the pressure and heat was so great when it was being formed that it destroyed them, melted them, so to speak. Now, just remember that this shell business and other things you find, other marks of animals or early life, is one of the ways they tell the age of these rocks, by knowing what period of the life of the earth that these come from. They can tell the age of the formation. They also tell it by getting relationships between all the different layers as the rocks are, that came as the rocks were laid down. Now there's another interesting thing you'll find in the shale. In little pockets you'll find the quartz crystals. And these are formed in layers where there was evidently extra heat and pressure, and some material came in there that was was such that it formed into a quartz crystal. And these are not perfect ones, and they're pretty small ones, but you get the idea of them. And you can
take these for samples.
They're all for our school exhibit, all of them. Let Miss Preston have them.
I want to put them back in the envelope.
Oh, Reese, it took a big handful.
Well, they should all
look them over later.
That's the simplest sample.
You look them over later. Now, do you want something on the human history part?
Yes, we would.
Well, just a little bit. Okay. To know how much of a dose you wanted here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm particularly interested in having them here about the fact that I understand that there were some early World Peace Conference is held up on the mountain here. I think this would be a very important thing for them to hear.
Okay, I'll start with one thing. I know most everybody that comes is interested in the Indians, and I won't go into a lot about the Indians, but there were Indians here when the early settlers came, and this area was mostly settled by Dutch people who came across from Holland. But there was one group of people called Huguenots who were French people who were driven out because of their religious beliefs. And when they came to the area right around New Paltz, which is a town at the foot of the mountain, I think you came through it.
Yes, we're going to go up Huguenot Street.
Well, just have in mind that this is one of the few places in the United States where the settlers that came in from Europe actually bought the land from the Indians. The other place it was done was down in Pennsylvania, where William Penn established his settlements. But they actually traded this land around New Paltz for implements that they gave to the Indians in payment for the land. You had a question.
Yeah,